Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Good afternoon once again. This is the Devil's Advocates radio program, and we are talking with you this afternoon about two of the three major issues that are taking the headlines in America today, even worldwide. One, of course, the recent death of the Queen of England, Queen Elizabeth II. David Beckham in the queue, in the line, waiting to pay his respects. He showed up at 2 a.m. in the morning, and along with many, many other people waiting in line this day and days ahead, including this weekend, to pay their respects to the recently deceased Queen and to celebrate the tenure of her time in that office. Also to reflect on the history of the past 70 years of her reign. And we suspect we'll be talking more about that this weekend and certainly on Monday when the formal event for her takes place, memorial service in England. We are chatting this afternoon about two major issues, the first hour focusing in particular upon this news coming out of Texas, coming out of Florida, coming out of Martha's Vineyard in Massachusetts, that the governor of Florida orchestrated the transportation of about 50 people, 50 Venezuelan immigrants from Texas to Massachusetts, duping them, misrepresenting them into believing that if they get on these planes, they move north to the states where they are now in residence, if you will, because of the good support and responses of the Massachusetts citizens. If they move there, they will have employment, they will have support, and in fact, all of those promises, empty promises made in the interest of a political stunt. We spent a lot of time in the first hour chatting about that particular issue and the legal trappings of that, the aspects of that that prompt us to wonder about whether or not that is legal in America, the jurisdiction of state government officials to do that, the exclusive jurisdiction of the federal government over immigration issues, and the possibilities that there could be lawsuits coming out of this based upon the misrepresentations made to them by people in Texas, in Florida. We're going to move in that same vein to the second major headline topic in America this afternoon and this day, and that is the release by the federal district court judge in South Florida of another major decision having to do with the management of the investigation of the documents that were seized by federal agents at Mar-a-Lago, the former president's residence and resort in South Florida. Documents that we know contained many materials that are classified, some of them of the highest nature. And we'll chat more about that in just a moment or so. We're going to go back in this hour and give a little more of a predicate, a basis for understanding how it is that the judge just yesterday issued a major decision that basically continues her previous orders and hands the former president yet another victory, if you will, in terms of delaying this investigation, putting up roadblocks to it. And we'll talk also about the response of the United States Department of Justice, likely coming, if not today, very soon, in a very predictable appeal of her order of just yesterday to the United States Court of Appeals for the 11th Circuit. We'll talk about that and the predicates for that, the reasons for doing that. But let's go back. Let's go back to the start of it, because it is important to understand how we got here, how we got to a point where we've got a federal district court judge in what is a civil proceeding brought by the former president, plainly intended to stop a criminal investigation of the United States Department of Justice, and with some successes to this point, based upon the rulings, including one of just yesterday issued by Judge Eileen Connor cannon, appointed by President Trump not too long ago to preside over federal civil and criminal cases. Let's go back and get the understanding behind that, how we got here. We know well how we got here, and that is that over a period of months earlier this year, the United States government requested through the National Archives, through other offices of Washington, D.C., the return of documents that they felt strongly were still in the possession, the illegal possession of the former president there in Mar-a-Lago, made requests of his attorneys, issued a grand jury subpoena in June for their return, and representations made by some of the attorneys for the former president that all those documents have now been returned. Attorneys who now need to be concerned about the nature of those representations and whether those representations were almost certainly inaccurate, whether they exposed them to some possibility of ethical review by the bars in which they are licensed to practice law. We know as well, in the wake of those multiple attempts over a period of months this past summer to get those documents back, attempts that if they had been fully successful, if the former president and his staff had responded to those and complied and returned all those documents, highly likely, speculation by me, but highly likely that we would not be talking about this today in the context of a criminal investigation. The National Archives, the government would have probably been happy to return those, even though they do implicate an awful lot of national security issues, which we will also talk about in this hour. We know that all those attempts to try to get those documents were unsuccessful, and ultimately, based upon probable cause, agents of the Federal Bureau of Investigation went, as they are authorized to do under the federal criminal procedure rules, they went to a magistrate judge in South Florida and said, we have reason to believe, we have probable cause to conclude, based upon evidence in a 35-page affidavit, a sworn affidavit, most of which we do not have access to, most of it redacted. But based upon that, the magistrate judge said, yes, indeed, I conclude that there is, in fact, reasonable cause, there is probable cause to believe that if you go into the former president's location there in Mar-a-Lago, you will find what? You'll find evidence of a crime. You'll find evidence of possible violations of three different federal statutes that make it illegal to transport, to remove, to use, to otherwise possess documents that are classified in nature, some of which do not have to be classified in nature. The point is documents that are in the ownership, the possessory interests of who? Of the people of the United States of America, not owned by any president, not owned by any chief executive, but in the possession of the government by the people themselves. And that's what those statutes are all about. The magistrate judge said, yes, I agree, authorize those federal agents properly and federally, legally to go in. And they did that in August 8th. Significantly, as we get to the issues now in this hour of discussion related to the issuance of this opinion by Judge Cannon just yesterday. What else did the magistrate judge say way back in early August that is relevant to this time, sometimes forgotten by the national media? And that is that as a part of that affidavit, a part of the authorization that he gave to those federal agents to go in and do the search, do the seizure under what? Under the Fourth Amendment to our Constitution. What did he also say? And this is routine practice for any federal investigative search warrant, seizure of them. He set forth a process by which a privilege review team would be in place. And what would that group do after these documents were seized? The magistrate judge says, before you turn them over to the people who are responsible for reviewing them substantively to determine whether or not there's actually a violation of those federal statutes, I want you, the magistrate judge said, to subject all of these documents to a review. And I want that review to be undertaken by a group of individuals who have not been a part of the investigation to this point. They're not a part of the preparation of this case, nor will they be a part of the future investigation of this case. They're called a filter team, a privilege review team, many different styles, many different descriptions of this group, routinely used in these circumstances where there may be the acquisition, the seizure of documents that fall into what category? The category of attorney-client privilege. Things that are exchanged communications, writing, notes, emails, documents that were generated in the context of a lawyer representing a client. Those kinds of things are protected by attorney-client privilege. And yes, indeed, as a part of any routine investigation, any routine seizure, it would be common for the magistrate judge to order the creation, the establishment of this review team, and that's what happened here. That review team took a look at these thousands of documents that were in fact seized, and according to reports coming out of the Department of Justice, they identified not a great number, but some documents that did in fact fall in the category of attorney-client privilege. And what did they do pursuant to the directives of the federal court? They set those aside, and they said, you know what? The investigators, the people looking at this to determine whether there is an investigation that should go on, whether there should be perhaps criminal charges down the road, we are not going to let you see those. We're going to segregate those documents out and put those separately, probably return those as well to the attorneys for whom? For the former president. That's what they did. In the wake of that process, again, no one's been charged to this point. This is not a situation where a post-indictment by a federal grand jury, there are challenges. What happened is that the president's legal team filed a civil lawsuit challenging this process and saying, you know what, judge, supposedly randomly assigned to Judge Cannon. We have no reason to believe that that didn't happen, but assigned to her. We want you, judge, to appoint a special master to take a second look at all of these documents. Do this again. Repeat this process. Have this special master review all these documents and determine whether or not there are documents that are shielded by attorney-client privilege. And, oh, by the way, we want to add in a second category, and that is executive privilege. And we want you to appoint this person to do that process. As we know well, on Labor Day, Judge Eileen Cannon issued a first of several orders saying, yes, I will do that. I will issue this order. I will direct the appointment of a special master, and we're going to go forward after that. And based upon that, we're going to chat more about what she did yesterday, right after the break, talking about the Mar-a-Lago investigation, documents, legal procedure, and judicial perspectives on what is happening in South Florida. Come back. Stay with us right after the break.
Guys at work tell me there's a special club we can join if we meet in the bathroom.
The Devil's Advocates, never personal, only politics.
This is the Devil's Advocates radio show. My name is Jim Santel. I'm sitting in this afternoon for Mike Crute, who's off doing the work and the business of this radio station. Also here on the show today is Evan, my producer. Along with him, we're taking your phone calls at 844-967-2789. In this second hour of our show today, we're focusing upon this other major news story breaking yesterday and today. That is the decision by Judge Eileen Cannon to issue yet another order with respect to the management of the criminal investigation of the documents seized out of Mar-a-Lago. And so we're taking your phone calls as well. Right before the break, I was setting all this up and describing how we got to where we are today. We know that in the wake of all of that and all of the issuance by the magistrate judge of a search warrant and the filing of this civil lawsuit for the appointment of a special master, we know that on Labor Day, not too long ago, Judge Cannon issued an order indicating that she would, in fact, do the fairly extraordinary thing of appointing a special master to go over all these materials, about 11,000 records altogether. altogether seized by the FBI, 100 of them apparently marked as classified materials, and directing that that special master would set aside any potentially covered by attorney-client privilege or in what is generally regarded as a fairly controversial inclusion there, also executive privilege. She included that as a part of this assignment as well. She also significantly on Labor Day prevented the prosecutors, the United States Department of Justice, from using any of those records in its continuing investigation of the time. Also highly, highly unusual, highly atypical, and receiving an awful lot of criticism out there. But as a part of that order, again, way back in Labor Day, Judge Cannon permitted the government to continue using the documents for this national security assessment and a classification review. And the problem with that is the Department of Justice has identified is you can't do one without the other, that the FBI agents are the ones who necessarily have the documents in order to do the extent to which this was a risk, a compromise of our national security, which it may well have been. You need to have both sides of the aisle, both the investigators and the national security folks in the same room. You can't separate that out, as the judge seemed to contemplate. And sure enough, days after that, the Justice Department asked Judge Cannon to stay parts of order, to basically suspend parts of that order, and requesting that the FBI be allowed to resume investigating matters related at least to the 100 seized files that were marked as classified, these matters that may in fact compromise our national security, our national interests overseas, and once again said that the Bureau's, the FBI's criminal investigation of those files, as they said, inextricably linked to the separate national security reviews that she said could continue. And so sort of scratching its head. And at the same time, the Justice Department told Judge Cannon in its pleadings that if she did not agree to these requests for the stay by Thursday, which was just yesterday, it would ask the appeals court to intervene. So effectively, the government was asking sort of a compromise here, sort of acquiescing to some of her decision to impose a special master, but at least permitting the FBI to go forward going forward with the investigation, asking Judge Cannon to let the investigators continue working with a smaller batch, that is at least on the 100 documents that may in fact compromise our national security. And that's what leads us up to yesterday's actions and the decision that she made about the appointment of the special master and other issues related to the supervision through this civil case by this judge of a criminal investigation going on by the United States Department of Justice. And before we get to exactly what she did and comments and perspectives on that, we are going to take a couple of callers here. We appreciate the callers who are calling in. Let's begin with Margaret. Margaret from Cottage Grove, thanks for calling in. What is your comment, your question, your observation this afternoon?
Well, my question is, does the current order from Judge Cannon, would that preclude the Department of Justice from, based on the video that was shown of 2 days after the DOJ request that Trump is loading boxes into a helicopter to go to Bedminster, would DOJ be precluded under this order from continuing the investigation or starting a new one?
All right, Margaret, you have, I suspect if you didn't go to law school, you should go to law school, because those are exactly the kinds of things that lawyers and certainly Department of Justice attorneys right now are looking at. One of the great challenges, Margaret, that if I'm pronouncing your name correctly, I hope I am, that one of the things that the government is complaining about so much is exactly the kind of thing you're questioning, which is, what do you mean by this? And what is the scope of the investigation that we can continue? You can't simply say that without giving us some parameters. And so, Margaret, your question about whether or not we could pursue things, as you indicated, a video showing boxes maybe going to another location, can we still pursue that? Or is that all a part of your prohibition on matters related to the execution of this search warrant? Maybe you can argue that it was separate and apart from that. Maybe this is something else, but we don't know because, again, one of the great criticisms of Judge Cannon's order is its lack of specificity, its failure to describe exactly what you can and cannot do, aside from simply saying, go ahead and continue with your national security investigation. There's not an answer to that because it's not in the order. And with due respect to the judge, I don't know that she contemplated the kinds of things, Margaret, that you identified appropriately as being problematic with this order. That's exactly the kind of reason why. That's the reason why the government is so frustrated in this situation and why they will, in all likelihood, be pursuing this entire matter to a higher court, to the Court of Appeals in Atlanta, the 11th Circuit. So, Margaret, we thank you so much for your comment. Before we go to another break, let's take another caller. Let's go from Beaver Dam. We got Beaver Dam. We've got CJ calling in. Let's just take your question, and then we'll go to a break.
Hey, Jim, it's not so much a question, but I believe this judge is actually walking on eggshells because there's the CIPA. It's called the Classified Information Protection Act. And there's parameters on how a jury can be set forth because the prosecuting attorney has got the jurisprudence of beyond a reasonable doubt of
And all those things. And CJ, I'm going to have you stay on the line so we can pursue this right after the break. We're going to take that up. Very important issues related to what you can do and cannot do. We're going to chat more about that right after the break here on the Devil's Advocates radio station.
Advocates. So relevant, they have one foot in tomorrow.
And we're back. This is Jim Santel, Devil's Advocates broadcast this afternoon. We're chatting about this decision by Judge Eileen Cannon of South Florida. Latest decision, which we're going to get to in this last half an hour of our time together this afternoon, talking about the manner and means by which the United States Department of Justice can and cannot continue its investigation of the seizure of the documents of Mar-a-Lago in early August. And right before the break, I was chatting with CJ, who was commenting about how, in his perspective, this particular judge is walking on eggshells, I believe it was your word, CJ, and also failed to appreciate some of the statutory trappings of what's going on here, that these documents are regulated by statutes, and there are rules and requirements related to that. Let me give you another chance to engage me further in some discussion about those issues, CJ.
Well, in this, I believe it was in the mid-'80s when we were trying somebody for espionage, and they had given the prosecutor these classified documents, and obviously they were classified enough that they didn't want the jury to get them and or show them, because obviously the jury's not going to have clearances. So the CIPA Act makes it so that the prosecutor can go towards a jury with a summary of all the classified documents that this person may or may not have tried to give to the Russians or whoever it may have been. And she's running on thin eggshells, just because who's to say that judge is worthy of having a clearance to see special access program material, only a dozen people in the United States get to have.
Exactly.
And basically, in the current cabinet, it's the only people that get to see it. And even some of them don't even get to see it.
Right. And CJ, a very important point, and it really does lead into the discussion about what she's done. Thank you so much for your observation that this is not just about paper, right? This is not just about some documents that happen to be found in a resort in Florida. This relates to the national security of the United States of America, and that there are rules and regulations. And yes, you're absolutely right. When it comes to cases in federal district courts, sometimes even state courts, there is a statute. There are many statutes out there that regulate how these things can be handled. But one of them does contemplate some summaries of otherwise classified information. Why? Because they are so very important. They do implicate our national security. And also goes to this larger question about background to review. When I was in Iraq and when I was U.S. attorney, I had certain clearances. Those were premised upon background checks of me and of other people with whom I could share those materials. Restrictions on where you can look at these documents. Restrictions on the circumstances of your actually reviewing them, keeping them safe and secure. All kinds of statutes out there that are very important as we go ahead. Another reason why, if you will, the federal government, the United States Department of Justice, which understands and appreciates all the trappings of what you just said, CJ, about how these things can and cannot be used, They're the ones who should be focusing on this right now. Plenty of opportunities, if this case is ever indicted, to resolve whether or not the search warrant was properly done, other things like that. But right now, once again, an awful lot of focus by this judge on issues without a lot of clarity. And so let's get to what she did just yesterday in response to this entire history up to this time. And again, this challenge, if you will, by the Department of Justice about her proposal to appoint a special master. As we know, she said she was going to do it. And yes, indeed, yesterday she did do just that. She basically issued a 10-page decision and she appointed a special master. And it was suggested by the Trump legal team. But the country, the world should know that among the four candidates, two proposed by the Department of Justice, two proposed by the former president's legal team, this is an individual that was embraced by everyone. His name is Raymond Deary.
That's amazing. They could agree.
It is amazing, isn't it? And it, you know what it goes to? You know, Evan, this notion which we've talked about before, that we have judges who are appointed by Republicans and Democrats on all sides of the political aisle who do their jobs well without partisan approach, right? And they're out there, and they're not few and far between. I practiced in front of them. The great majority of our federal judiciary is in that category. Candidly, we've seen that in the recent decisions in some 80 different federal cases out there, many of them decided by Trump-appointed federal judges that, in fact, the 2020 election was not stolen. That's not a partisan. That's not a political decision. That's based upon the law and the facts. And we have every reason to believe that based upon not only his background, Raymond Deary, a now retired judge out of the Eastern District of New York, which is basically Long Island. He was a Reagan appointee, but has a great reputation. The Department of Justice once again saying, yep, he'll do a good job, even though the department not at all crazy about this process. Again, duplicative of what the review team has already done, but judges going ahead and doing this, appointed him. And to CJ's point, now the questions are, all right, no reason to believe that he would not get the clearance to review the documents. One of the challenges is going to be to ensure that he does, in fact, get the clearance, because what he's going to be doing, he's going to be looking at 11,000 documents soon. The judge has imposed upon him a deadline of November 30th. The Department of Justice wanted this to be late October, but judge said, nope, you've got until November 30th to do this. He's got to make certain that in that analysis, he himself does not in any way compromise the process. And so he will have to be certified. He'll have to be given this clearance by the Department of Justice to review these documents. No reason to believe that will not come to Judge Deary based upon his background, his experience in this area. But it, again, requires what? A delay with a capital D to get that done. And then, of course, much to the chagrin, if you will, the Department of Justice, as he goes forward and does what the review team has already done, 11,000 documents, 100 of them marked classified. We also know that there are about 50 folders, much advanced by the Department of Justice, empty folders found inside Mar-a-Lago.
It's almost spookier.
Where are they? Where did those? What did they used to contain? Were there materials that were also seized? Or are they? Are they in other places? Marguerite sort of indicated, gosh, could those documents have already gone to other places? Could there be other places where the Department of Justice should be looking and perhaps should potentially be searching for other documents out there? And I suspect that government is looking at that and determining whether there's probable cause to do that kind of a review down the road.
Do we know if these files are collated with their cover sheets and folders?
That's the other issue. We know, of course, that we have that infamous photograph, obviously staged by the FBI. I don't mean staged in a bad sense. They do that all the time to give you an indication of what they found. Again, I've seen those on a regular basis, not those particular documents, but those red cover sheets. Those are very common. Why? They shout at you. This is a secure doc. This is classified. Handle this according to your instruction, according to your classification. We don't know. We don't know.
I do wonder if there's some sort of indication on the cover sheets, on the folders, that sort of, like I said, correlate to the contents.
The content,
so you know what was
inside
in there,
to some
degree.
Right. Something to indicate. And again, presumably the filter team has looked at this. The Department of Justice would have some better sense of that, about whether or not we know about their content. All a part of further investigation of this, presumably also involving, as we sort of glossed over today, witnesses who are out there who provided probable cause who come forward and say, you know what, I may or may not know about the contents of those folders, Evan, that we're chatting about right now. People who would plainly have given probable cause to go in the first place. So lots of investigative things to do. Lots of things that I would offer should not be in the public domain. Evan, you and I should be talking about many other things in America today.
It's true.
We shouldn't be talking about this. This should have gone silent on August 8th. And a lot of reporters from New York Times, Washington Post, and perhaps you and me also, frustrated by not knowing, but that's the way it's got to be. That's the way an investigation should go forward. We shouldn't be having all of this discussion. Good, if you will, perhaps to satisfy the American public, doing some redactions of this search warrant, that there was probable cause, that there was something there. This is not a magistrate judge who was out there on his own. This is not a partisan reproach. Good for us to know that, but beyond that, this should not be in the public domain. It is more and more by virtue of this judge continuing to, again, appoint a special master, someone who is credible, who will do this job. Lots of issues about what he will be doing now. His assignment, he presumably has to get staff. That is a huge job to look through 11,000 documents, even by November 30th. She has also indicated along the way, of course, that if he comes across things that she has, to her credit, said, you know what, Judge, if you find things during the course of your analysis that you need to take a look at, maybe I will consider, as she said, she will said thereafter consider prompt adjustments to the court's orders as necessary. What does that mean? We don't know. We don't know. But plainly giving this judge some latitude to look further and come back to her. And that, of course, raised the possibility that the judge clearly might quickly clear these items. The FBI could then regain unrestricted use of them as criminal inquiry. But again, by November 30th, he's got that obligation to do that. So she did give that concession. And perhaps it's also, as some people have indicated, a sign that she herself is not delaying this by virtue of the fact that she sort of did meet the Department of Justice's deadline, if you will, at least yesterday. Now,
I do have a question for you.
Yes, please.
Yeah, it's sort of a two-part question. So one thing that's been in the back of my mind with, you know, some rather important elections rapidly approaching, that the Department of Justice has this sort of unspoken guideline that X amount of time before an election, we won't bring these cases, charges, accusations, whatever it may be, that we won't bring those to public light closer to an election. So does her decision yesterday, first of all, does it keep it in sort of the civic...
It keeps it in the arena, does it not?
It does.
It absolutely does, right? It's certainly a fact we're talking
about. So does it get to move forward now and the Department of Justice is off the hook as far as it being their responsibility? So
fascinating question, right? It's fascinating. You hit it right on the head. So there is this very informal, it's not in a memorandum, very informal notion that, you know what, if you're going, let's think about the 2024 election.
We saw Comey.
Exactly. Like, about 2016 and that conduct, if you will. I think most people look at the former director of the FBI and say that conduct inappropriate, inconsistent with the Department of Justice announcing, if you will, results of investigations, clearing, unclearing a candidate, naming Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
That's the reason for it. You don't want to influence an election based upon an investigation not yet completed. And that's the point. Maybe somebody will be charged in this particular case. Maybe they won't. But all the more reason for that not to be in the public domain, which it is now in the public domain. That's the core of your question. And does it take the Department of Justice off the hook? It really doesn't and shouldn't, right? We shouldn't expect that our federal authorities should behave differently. We still want them to do things. The general rule is that you prosecute a case when you're ready to do so, when the evidence is assembled enough to do that. Highly unlikely that there would be any charge by November, early November, so it's not much implicated. But as we go into an election year, 2023, 2024, those issues will loom large again. And the mere fact, once again, that this judge is continuing to, if you will, engage in the supervision of a criminal investigation that is within, as we talked in the first hour, in the exclusive purview of the executive branch. This is something that judges do not get involved in. Yes, they issue search warrants. Yes, they convene grand juries, but they're not public proceedings, as you would have in the wake of an indictment and all the proceedings that follow that, including the opportunity after a case is indicted to challenge all of this. This is too early. We don't know where we're going with this, and it simply mucks up. And to the point that the Department of Justice is taking, as they announce effectively today, that they will be taking this up to the Court of Appeals. They're dissatisfied. Yes, they're happy, if you will, maybe happy with a small h, that this special master is not the other candidate proposed by the Trump team. But nonetheless, they're not happy with this restriction on the continuing capacity to go forward. So anticipate a Jim Santel prediction here. Anticipate soon that the Department of Justice will be announcing, will be filing an appeal to the 11th Circuit and appealing now probably everything, probably saying at a minimum, that they should be permitted to go forward with this review of the 100 documents that are classified. And let us go ahead and do that, judges, and a three-judge panel of the 11th Circuit. We're going to be talking more about that judge's order and what's going to be happening next, the implications of it, and the reasons why Americans should be concerned about this as we go into the final moments here on the Devil's Advocates Friday afternoon in Wisconsin.
Myself and let the truth be told.
Go time. I think the White House could have handled this better.
Warning, listening to the Devil's Advocates may expose you to opposing views.
And we're back in these final moments of the Devil's Advocates on a Friday afternoon. Thank you for staying with me, joining me this afternoon, and my producer, Evan, who is also continuing to take your calls at 844-967-2789 as we begin to wrap up our discussion. The good stuff, if you will, looking forward, predictions, and following up on the reason why all this is important. Right before the break, I made a prediction that sometime soon, maybe over the weekend, maybe on Monday, the Department of Justice is going to file at least a narrow appeal of Judge Cannon's decision to the 11th Circuit. It's the circuit right below, as are the other circuits, below the United States Supreme Court, seeking to have that order either overturned completely or at least with respect to the 100 documents, the 100 classified documents that were seized at Mar-a-Lago, permitting the government to go ahead with what? Its investigation and examination of those. And it goes to the question that, Evan, you asked just before the break, which is, what is this all about? And these 50 empty folders. Why is this appeal important? Why is the advocacy by the Department of Justice more than just protecting this all-important investigation? It goes to national security, right? Because, Evan, you asked, what was in those folders? Do we know what was in them? Do we know where those documents may be? What possible implications does this have for people overseas, the people who are, frankly, our spies overseas, our people who are in positions of importance and security, but whose statuses and whose identities could be compromised if, in fact, some of these documents are still out there. And so the United States Department of Justice, not saying this simply because of the investigation and the importance of it, but we've got people's lives who may be on the line here. Maybe the security and safety of our entire nation, of the international community, could be compromised by this. And that's the reason why wanting to go forward with an appeal of this. Along the way, this judge also saying some things that have gotten an awful lot of people to pause quite dramatically. We know that the Office of the Director of National Intelligence has said that after her first order and the pausing of this risk assessment of the classification review, that the government could not go forward and conduct the assessment without the criminal investigation going forward, that the judge's interpretation is very narrow. Well, just in this order yesterday, once again, Judge Cannon indicated that she doesn't believe that. She doesn't believe that these two are inextricably intertwined, and she rejected this notion that the criminal investigation was tied to this national security pursuit, contrary to what I think most national security experts and criminal investigators would say, went on to say that the mere fact that some of these documents may be classified, you say they're marked classified, they may not be classified, once again suggesting that maybe indeed the FBI is not properly representing what's going on here. And the reason I raise those things, the reason I comment specifically about those comments, she talks about some facts that may be unknown, some things that need to be resolved. All of this indicates what I think most people view as a huge skepticism about the federal government. That is not to say that judges shouldn't question, shouldn't examine. As a federal prosecutor and a civil litigator for 30 years, absolutely, judges have every right to ask questions about what we're doing, both, frankly, during the course of a trial, before that, after that. But the reality is that this particular judge, evincing, if you will, a huge, I will say, hostility toward representations made by federal officials in their official capacities under oath, representations made to her in the context of litigation. We know that if those representations, because of other experiences we've had in our recent national history, we know that if you misrepresent things to a court, you will get in trouble. And nonetheless, this judge comes forward and says, I doubt that what you're saying to me is true, or at least I have reason to be skeptical about whether you're telling me the truth. And that's a skepticism that I think is highly problematic for a judge who should be apolitical, nonpartisan. I'm not saying she needs to accept everything at face value, but reviewing this and articulating that kind of skepticism is, I would say, contrary to the fundamental notions about ways in which judges should proceed. And I will tell you that we'll use this as a bit of a springboard, if you will, to what Mike told me I could also talk about today, which is tomorrow morning on Morning Cannolis between 9 and 11. Going to be back on the air once again. We're going to be picking up that issue among others. We're going to be talking in particular about the role of the Department of Justice. We're going to be using the recent publication of this book by the former United States Attorney out of the Southern District of New York. His name is Jeffrey Berman, and he recently released a document, a book, if you will, called Holding the Line, in which he described the role of the Department of Justice and the role that judges play, the role the Department of Justice plays internally and externally, and talked about exactly the issue that I'm just describing now. That is the integrity that we expect of all prosecutors, of all people who are out there, to conduct themselves in a way that is appropriate, consistent with the law, and again, not subject to being completely free to do and say whatever it is the government wants to say. That's what the adversarial system is all about. We're going to talk more about those issues tomorrow morning on Morning Cannolis. We're going to talk as well about the John Durham investigation and where that ended up. These attempts, if you will, to compromise the legitimacy of the Department of Justice, both internally and externally. And I raise that now because it is a discussion that's much related to this discussion about Eileen Cannon's order and the things we've been discussing throughout the day today. I know that right before I went into that advertisement, we had one other caller who was on the phone, and maybe we can take her yet before we sign off today. Evan, why don't we bring her up and see if she is still with us to make a call or a comment about our conversation this afternoon.
Yes, we've got Eileen.
Wonderful. Eileen, go ahead. Join us for this conversation. Yes.
Okay, this will be really quick, and I'll just ask the questions and then hang up. First of all, they keep saying they don't know what's missing. Under the circumstances, aren't there copies of every document that's ever been in the storage area, and either online or a list someplace? And what there must be copies someplace. The other one is the security aspect. There must be a camera in the storage area. Who actually carried the boxes out of the storage area?
Right.
Did Trump do that? Did somebody else do that? When did they actually do that?
Right.
And those are, to me, those are just basic questions, because they keep saying they don't know what's missing and who did them. So I'm going to hang up and then just listen to see if you have any answers.
Absolutely, Eileen. Great questions all. And again, another person we should employ, the Department of Justice, and become a lawyer, or not a lawyer, just someone who's got the insight to focus on these things. Absolutely. As a part of the investigation, you can be certain the Department of Justice right now looking at all those videotapes. And again, maybe some of that's even inside the affidavit itself that was redacted. Probably a lot of that incorporated there that the magistrate judge looked at. We don't know about that, but certainly a part of this investigation. As to copies, yes, there's no doubt that copies are out there, but that's not to say that, any of those copies end up in a back room, if you will, at Mar-a-Lago, other places. That's the point about compromise, and that's the reason why this investigation is going forward today. I thank all of you for spending so much time with me this afternoon talking about these major issues in America today. I want to thank Evan very much for being my producer, chatting with me about these issues. Join us every weekday for Devil's Advocates, these kinds of discussions. And yes, join me once again tomorrow morning for Morning Cannolis, as we're going to talk more about the integrity of the Department of Justice, thinking about the past, and also about the future of America. This is Devil's Advocates Radio. My name is Jim Santel. Have a great weekend, everybody.